You're listening to Transmission Roundup. Hello and welcome to Queer Ear. I'm Rory Boyle and you're listening to the Transmission Roundhouse podcast that's queer thinking, straight talking and always spills the LGBT. Now, with the Black Lives Matter movement really gaining huge momentum over the last while, we've seen allyship spoken about in all its many different forms constantly online, and it's something I personally feel really passionately about. So on this episode, we'll be focusing on how you can be the best possible queer ally. Now, I could not answer some of the questions on how to be the best possible ally alone. So in true Queer Ear style, I have some amazing guests joining me on this episode. The first of which is a wonderful writer, producer, and founder of Unmuted Brum. Her name is Soraya, and she is one of the most inspirational people I've seen in terms of working with queer people of colour at a grassroots level. We're also going to be joined by a singer, songwriter, performer with none other than Sync the Pink. We've got LaPhil, who you'll be hearing from in just a moment. And this conversation that you're about to hear actually took place as part of the hashtag Round Your House Roundtable Live Discussions, which of course took place online given the current situation that we're in. But it's been really interesting to break down some of these issues in order to find out how you really can be a true ally. So without further ado, I'm going to let my guests introduce themselves and you'll hear the discussion that took place on Zoom for the first time in podcast form.
Hi everyone, my name is LaPhil and I go by the pronouns he and him, although you can call me whatever you like to and I won't get offended. I am a singer and performer primarily. I'm from Huddersfield up in Yorkshire and I live in London now. I'm part of Sync the Pink and we do basically lots that we originally do it parties and stuff around London, but we've been around the world doing different shows and events, mainly to sort of like bring the LGBT community into more of a mainstream light as well. So we do lots of collaborations with companies and lots of charities to try and just promote a lot of diversity amongst the community.
Hi everyone, I'm Soraya. I'm an artist and a creative producer. I'm the founder of a QTPOT network in Birmingham called Unmuted Brum. We work to serve and create spaces for LGBT people of colour in Birmingham. So I'm from Birmingham. I live in Manchester now, but, you know, repping both the cities. And I also am the co-founder of a new youth LGBT network called Colours Youth Network, which works with younger LGBT people of colour between the ages of 14 and 25. So hopefully I can share some of my perspective from that perspective today.
All right, I think where I'd kind of like to start is maybe let's talk a little bit about allyship in the time of COVID, because obviously one of the most visible ways that we can express our allyship is, you know, physically being at, let's say, a Pride march or a protest or some sort of queer event. And those things haven't really been able to happen in the way that they normally do over the last few months. So I think sometimes it can be a bit of a double-edged sword when we talk about social media. There's lots of people that feel like allyship on socials can be very performative. So I'm wondering if maybe you've given any thought to how people can show their allyship online and it actually means something as opposed to just kind of a performative exercise. Don't know if either one of you wants to jump in on that.
Yeah, I think I've been meditating and reflecting on what we mean by the word ally. And I often try not to use it so much because it can become, again, one of those buzzwords, can't it? And so even though it's really good to kind of signal to what we're talking about, when I think about allyship, I try and frame it when I'm talking to others about kind of friendship And what would you, how would you class being a good friend? How would you stand up for your friend? How would you be there for someone you cared about as a friend in time of need? And I think that helps sometimes with framing around, is it performative or is it not? Because if you've got a friend in need and you've just texted them to check them out, you're not going to necessarily tweet and be like, my friend's having a really hard time and I've just checked up on them. You're just going to do it, aren't you? You're going to do what you're doing. And also I've read some stuff recently about the difference between ally and accomplice. And I know that that is a language that people are starting to talk about. And some of the key differences are kind of that an accomplice, it's a state of being. It's not so much about the actions that you're doing. You are always an accomplice and you're always in that space where you're focusing on the goal of the community that you're trying to serve. It's not about what are you doing to signal that you're doing the right thing. You're focusing on what are the needs that this group are asking for right now. So for example, there's a lot of focus on Black trans lives at the moment and the, and kind of conversations about protecting trans rights. And so am I working towards the same goal that the community are trying to work towards? So I think it's an ever flowing thing, but I was interested in that kind of conversations about around allyship and accomplice and the reading around that.
Soraya, I'm really glad that you brought up that point about Black trans lives, because obviously we're seeing a lot of new information about allyship online thanks to the Black Lives Matter movement. And I know that Pride and LGBTQ issues and Black Lives Matter are two separate things, and they're both very important and they both deserve, you know, their own sort of conversation. But I think maybe where they intertwine in terms of this conversation is that what I keep seeing from non-Black people online, which I think is fantastic, is so many of them want to improve their allyship. I want to talk about how non-people of color who also identify as queer can be allies to queer people of color, how we can best do that, what the most sort of direct and simple ways are, if you're kind of starting from scratch, to show your allyship.
I think for me, it starts with learning the history of Pride, really. There's no way that you actually can separate Black Lives Matter and queer rights, because, you know, if we think about the history of the Pride and how it was riots against police brutality, which was a lot of it spearheaded by Black gender nonconforming people. I think once you really deep the roots of what Pride is, there's no way that you can see yourself separate from that community. I think what's happened with a lot of maybe, let's say, cis white gay men is that they're like, oh, that's like a separate community to mine. And actually what we're seeing now is more people are realizing that we all have a shared history. And I think what I've seen some great conversations happen is that people are saying Pride hasn't been canceled, Pride is back. Like, this is fighting on the streets for trans rights, for Black trans people, is literally the heart of Pride. Like, take away all the capitalist floats and all these things and Barclays and all that kind of stuff. And I think learning that empathy privately and the history privately will inform the way that you might want to do something publicly. I think that always has to come first before you decide what to tweet, what to put out.
It's completely right. I think like being able to help or criticize something means that you have to be able to know the history and the background. And I think like even sort of wider than Pride as well itself, it's just a general notion of how gender is being constructed and sort of created by the patriarchal society, like, and getting big words in. But yeah, because I think everything that we've come across in terms of struggles is purely because of things that have been built up over and over time. So I think it is about retracing back those steps and looking at how gender within different races have been constructed. Why does it mean certain things to be a man in one culture than another? Even for me, like every day I sort of come across is having to justify what it means to become a guy, how I express myself. And these are little things that the majority of the heteronormative side don't really think about.
And so Phil, obviously being part of Sync the Pink, you know, you're constantly surrounded by lots of queer people and lots of allies and people who are obviously celebrating what you do and your identity. Do you think if it all ended tomorrow and you went into, you know, a 9-to-5 office job, do you think you'd feel very nervous about how you'd be received there, or the lack of allyship that might be clearly visible? Because I'm thinking back to certain work environments that I've been in where I think it definitely hasn't felt inclusive and it hasn't felt particularly welcoming, you know, for a number of reasons. So I'm wondering if you were sort of taken out of the safe space of Sync the Pink, if that's something that would make you quite fearful, perhaps.
I guess, like, I'm very privileged in having to have experienced that type of love within that community. And we did a tour with Mel C and we tried to get to as many prides across the world as possible. And that sort of opened my eyes as to how much, like, love there is around the world as a community and how it's like one big family. So I think if I came out of that, I've been really blessed to be given that confidence and to be able to go into any environment. And don't get me wrong, there's lots of like corporate environments that we have to go into where I'm either the only Asian person in the room or I'm the only gay person in the room too. And I think it's that confidence of knowing that actually I'm coming from a place of love and my background is enriched with all that, that I feel like entering a corporate workplace where there isn't that, is that it's a lovely challenge and that there's more to be done. And it's a nice, like, it is difficult. I mean, my personal philosophy has always been trying to find new ways of thinking and seeing things. I see it as a positive thing to be able to change, essentially, rather than something that I'm scared of. But I can understand why lots of people would be fearful and of harassment and bullying. But I think I've got to a point in my life where I'm like, I will not take any of that anymore. So I will go right in and flick my hair in your face and let's try and get something new sorted. I think that's my plan of action.
Perfect. I love that confidence. Soraya, do you feel the same way?
I think, I guess as like a Black woman right now, my focus a lot is about what are the spaces that are going to feed me and what spaces can I have the most impact. For example, for a lot of people, like you were saying, Rory, this is a time when they've just had that sense of realization of, oh, my behavior is problematic, or what I said or what I thought is not okay. Whereas I guess for the rise in that consciousness means that for people who were experiencing racism or queer antagonism or transphobia all the time, it's not really anything new to them. It's just kind of re-rising this potential trauma that's already been in them. So it's kind of like, oh, I'm not just having to deal with the stress of lockdown and potential stuff that might go around there. Now I've got to be reminded of the challenges that I'm facing outside. So I think it's really important at the moment for me to be creating those spaces where with my queer people of colour, we just chill, we just hang out, we connect, we edify each other, because right now the focus can't be so much on that education. And it's really great to see kind of white people or white accomplices and allies stand up and say, I'm going to lead this book club, I'm going to lead this panel, I'm going to lead this space, because we need more spaces like that where kind of marginalized communities can just kind of rest really a little bit more and just enjoy a life a little bit and not be seen always as the educator on their oppressions. Even though I don't mind being in spaces where I'm kind of educating or sharing knowledge, I also am trying to shift my focus a little bit more on how do we create spaces where marginalized groups are centered and their care is on the top of the agenda.
Definitely. And rest is important. I'm very pro rest and not having to explain things 24/7. But I want to go back to you, Phil, for a second, because the time where you definitely weren't resting was on that Sync the Pink tour with Mel C. I mean, I know you were in South America, Europe, you know, you were in North America as well. It was a huge, huge tour. And you went to all these different prides and performed for all these amazing audiences in great locations. And I think for me, Mel C is a great example of somebody who really has put her money where her mouth is, in the sense that, you know, I think these days most pop stars have a pride anthem, or they've been on Drag Race, or they've, you know, done something similar, and nothing wrong with any of that. I enjoy seeing them do all those things. But again, it can feel a bit, to me at least, like performative allyship. Whereas, you know, I saw the clip where Mel C was holding up a trans flag and she was speaking about trans rights. And to be honest, I rarely see pop stars or people of her level of fame speak about trans rights that candidly. So to me, she's a great example of a true ally. I'm wondering if either of you have somebody in your mind who you think is a public figure that does it really well as well.
I think with Mel, she's been like 25 years or whatever into the game. And I think throughout that time, she's sort of realized what a massive LGBTQ plus following she's had. But I think with the year that she spent traveling with us, I think for her, she found it really enriching as well to be able to get lots of knowledge and to be able to just have a really honest dialogue with each of us, because there was about 5 to 6 of us that traveled around with her talking about these issues. So she was really conscious about doing that and be able to provide a platform. So I think that she is a great example of that. I always think that it's mainly female pop stars that are the ones that are public about it. I've not yet seen that many like massive male music icons or whatever, and I feel that there's more room to go.
Yeah, I would say the same. I was just kind of searching my mind and thinking, I don't really know anyone that I can think of. And also I think there's something interesting here as well for me, because in Birmingham and Manchester, we just have a different relationship with celebrity culture as well, I think, because a lot of the queer ideology is centralized from the London perspective. So I think that's also shaped the way that I think about what I want from celebrities. And that isn't much. Like, I don't really care what they say. You know, if you're a really massive pop star, to be like actually be able to talk genuinely on certain issues, you're so pushed and pressured by what your PR company is saying you should and shouldn't do and all these different things. So I think my focus has never really been on in that way.
Just going off what you said there, Soraya, about how, you know, maybe we can step away from the whole kind of celebrity ally idea. Do either of you have an example of maybe somebody in your life then who's non-LGBTQ that is quite inspirational in terms of like day-to-day allyship? Maybe that's a friend or a family member who just does it right.
For me, it's my friend and colleague, Pippa Frith, who works as an independent producer in Birmingham. She's a white, cis, straight woman. She, for me, really demonstrates that kind of accomplice. And I know she'll probably cringe even me saying this because she doesn't like to really be bigged up about what she does. But, you know, she's helped Cutie Pop artists write their ACE applications, has sat in and done workshops for people, has done mentoring for people on the side. But if you go onto her Twitter, someone might go, oh, this person's not posting as much. But I know for a fact that throughout their life, they are just carrying herself as kind of just always there for the community, always there, because she generally has friends in the community as well. So it's not like a thing of, oh, suddenly I've got to like search for people. She's just always there, always rooting. And a lot of that stuff of like accessing money and writing applications and feeling like helping people overcome imposter syndrome is such an important, powerful way that you can show up for someone, because, you know, she's had so many workshops where I've co-led with her, and much of that workshop has been saying to people, you deserve to go for this funding, you deserve to be in this space, you deserve to speak up in this way. And actually to have someone with her position of power say that, and kind of also say it behind closed doors and not let anyone know about it, is really powerful actually. And it can really change the course of someone's whole artistry. And so I want to see more of that, really. I want to see more of people just giving up their actual time and knowledge to specifically younger Cutie Pop and people of colour artists.
Yeah, I agree. That is so important. And I think even from my experience, so within Sync the Pink, so the directors, there's Glyn Fussell, who's very publicly part of Sync the Pink, but on the quieter side is actually a guy called Jamie Tagg. And he is completely heterosexual, but he's always there fighting. He's been such a massive part of Sync the Pink now, and he's created Mighty Hoopla. He's done all this stuff to try and give us all platforms to be able to live our best life. And without him, we wouldn't have got our foot in the door with a lot of these companies who probably wouldn't have, I don't know, I feel like it's quite upsetting to say that they wouldn't probably have spoken to us unless it was like a straight person to sort of like get a foot in before we could start speaking to them. But that's just the way it happened. And thankfully, like, Jamie's amazing, and he's been one of the ones who's sort of championed Sync the Pink throughout all the years as well, and his partner as well, to help us get all of the opportunities that we can get. So yeah, it is so important to use those platforms and wherever as an ally or comrade or accomplice.
One other thing I wanted to talk about quickly was, you know, a conversation that I had with somebody the other day, and he was talking to me about the fact that he thought that his brother might fall somewhere on the queer spectrum, and he wasn't really sure how to address it, because I think he was saying his brother was 19 and he was thinking he kind of would be coming out around now if he were going to come out. And I sort of spoke about how it sounded like he was doing all the right things, because this guy was telling me that he was, you know, just commenting positively on whenever he saw a queer person on TV, or commenting positively on any sort of queer literature he saw, or any sort of queer pop star. And so do you think sometimes the best way to be an ally is through doing subtle things like that? I also read about, you know, somebody who said the way I've kind of tried to show my allyship is having a book on LGBTQ history on my desk at work, just to show people that, you know, it's something that I'm completely pro and open about. Is it those subtle things that sometimes can mean more than maybe a huge gesture?
I think as a kid, I remember that there being very little, any representation of Asian or the LGBTQ community on TV. So I feel like anything that I would see, which was only like Queer as Folk, I'd say, is the only thing that I could refer to without throughout any conversation with family, friends or public. So I think with any opportunity, it's just to be able to speak about it and affirm it, positively affirm it, get more anecdotes out and see more things. And I think just having that around as a normalized backdrop without having to feel awkward about someone expressing it so this really and publicly as well.
Yeah, I would agree. I think it's kind of when you have that shared rage, when somebody rages about the same things that you rage about. You know, as me as like someone who identifies as cis is like angry and passionate about the way that trans people are being kind of vilified in the media and the way that Black trans siblings are not safe. And I feel like that is part of the solidarity that I stand as an ally in that way. Important. And also I kind of don't agree with the idea of coming out, so I, do you know what I mean? I think especially in QT pop communities, I think I try a lot to decenter coming out, because it's a lot of cultural experiences just aren't the same, and for some young people, some QT pop people, they'll never come out, and that's fine, or they'll come out to themselves and their immediate family and they won't ever say it online and they won't ever say it in their workplace. That's also a thing that I love to tell young people, is like, they're like, how do I come out? It's like, you've already come out. You've already told yourself. So it's happened now. So whatever you do now is just like, whatever you do, it's not like a thing. It's not like a train that you have to get on. It's just a kind of way, again, like a way of being. So
I think going back to that as well, like when you're saying about just being able to accept someone without coming out, I think it is about those expectations that we put onto people, which I sort of mentioned at the start, and stuff like for little brothers and little sisters is not to normalize a thing of the boys should be cutting their hair, like just tiny things like that already gives like a child or teenager growing up this sense of like what is expected of them. And I think that is what's really oppressive. And I think that's what we always have to try and combat every day. Like it is tiring having to pick that up all the time. But as an ally, I think that's the things which we have to sort of start breaking down. Because only once things are broken down to no expectations, can then people live a bit more freely without feeling they have to live up to an expectation. But also separately, but on that as well, like there's lots of allies that basically like when they sort of want to like get in the lingo, they sort of like just mention things like Drag Race and stuff and RuPaul's Drag. I'm like, please don't do that, because that is not the thing that links the whole community together. And it really frustrates me. And the amount of times that like I'll have someone come up to me and go, oh, you're like Gia Gunn. I'm like nothing like Gia Gunn. And it really stresses me out, because I'm like, that is not the focal point of the LGBTQ like community.
There is so much in both of what you've just said. I actually don't know where to go, and we have not that much time left. So I'm going to try and ask some key questions. Soraya, could I just get you to elaborate a bit more on that point that you made about coming out and how you don't have to do this kind of big coming out thing? I've had friends in the past, straight friends, who've wanted to throw coming out parties for people who've come out and, you know, make a big song and dance about it. And I know the person who came out didn't want that. So Let's maybe talk a little bit more about that and kind of what you shouldn't do.
I think it's just, you know, my dream is in like 20 years that you've got so many different types of young people looking, expressing, being themselves in different ways. You're allowing yourself to not be surprised and be curious about who they might become rather than trying to attribute certain ways of being or speaking or liking certain things, meaning that they're something and the other. For example, we work with a lot of young people who are like queer Muslims or from particular backgrounds where there's lots of challenges in their culture or religion or family background, which mean that it might not actually be safe for them to do so. But a lot of the time, the only messaging or narrative that they got is from like a white young queer perspective, maybe even someone who's quite affluent. For example, there's a young person that we have who was 12 who came and said, I've realised that I'm queer and I'm going to just write it in the family WhatsApp and I'm just going to say, forget it. Like, and I'm just, and we were just like, okay, let's think about what the potential consequences are. Because if you want to do that, that's totally fine. But sometimes there's not that understanding of the reality of what life is. So is that kind of validating, being like, you've come out to me, so you've come out. Do you know what I mean? Or you've told yourself, that's such a big hurdle. And that's so, and you can bask in that. And that's enough, and that's fine. And as you grow, you'll make the decisions that feel safest for you at that time. But it doesn't mean that you're any less queer because you haven't got like a big rainbow sticker on your window or anything like that.
Definitely. I think that, you know, no matter how you identify or how you express your identity, it's all valid as long as you know what you are doing and you're comfortable with yourself. So yeah, really important point to make. Well, Soraya, you're doing the Lord's work because, as the great Whitney said, I believe the children are our future. And so if you're getting through to them, you've got it sorted. All right, we're coming up to the end of the hour. We've got the last about 10 minutes or so. So I just really quickly want to read out one of the questions I've got in the chat. And then we'll talk a little bit about what both of you have going on at the moment, give you a chance to promote anything you'd like to get out there, because this will, of course, be on the podcast as well. The first thing I'm going to do, though, is read out this question. So it's, do you have any suggestions for allyship when it comes to dealing with generational differences within the queer community? I sometimes find conversations with older LGBTQ colleagues, friends, and family quite difficult, perhaps because their experiences may have been different to the younger queer community that I am a part of.
I completely agree that there's always going to be massive generational difficulties because things do move quite quickly, and especially with social media now as well to discuss everything. A lot of it is down to young people with technology as well to just be able to sort of find the communities and find voices that they align with. So I feel like those conversations are always going to be difficult, but I think it's about coming from a place of not arguing a point. And I think it's always really important to sort of treat each other with love and respect no matter what, especially if it's within the community. And it's all coming from a place of love, but the way that people talk about it can get quite defensive. So I feel like those conversations that we have day to day, we just have to sort of learn just generally to be a bit more kinder and in our approach and our intentions of defending arguments or points and our stances. So I think, those conversations are very useful. So keep on going.
As human beings, when something's new and it threatens our sense of self, we can become like kind of, oh, what does this mean for me then? And I think that potentially might be happening with some of the older LGBT community. And I know, for example, even the word queer, it can alienate some parts of the community because of their experience with it. So I think, we definitely need more spaces for intergenerational conversation, for spaces of listening, for understanding, because, you know, I have so much respect for older LGBT people. So I want to learn and listen from them. And that, I think that's the key, like you said, Phil.
Let's wrap things up quickly by telling all of our viewers today and our listeners on the podcast what you both have going on at the moment and coming up. Soraya, I know I've seen a crowdfunder on your social media. Tell us a little bit more about that and anything else that you'd like to plug away.
Thank you. So the crowdfunder is for Colours Youth Network, which is a UK-wide new organisation that focuses on working with young LGBT people of colour. So we previously sat in as individual youth workers within white organisations as a project. And as it grew, we realised that the need was greater and we wanted to be able to have full ownership and control and direction of that. So we're doing a 50k crowdfunder at the moment as part of that setting up the process, which is really exciting. We registered the business yesterday. So like it's a real thing. It's headed up by four LGBT youth workers and we're all over the UK. We've had two kind of flagship events called Colours Youth Festival and Colours Residential. And the festival brings together like lots of young queer people of colour from all over the UK. And now feels like a great time to do that.
Phil, I know obviously you're a performer and the last few months will have been tough in terms of actually getting out into performance spaces, but you've been keeping busy as I've seen on your socials. So tell us a bit more about what you've been up to and what you've got coming up.
During lockdown, I released new music. So yeah, you can listen to my stuff on Spotify. Just type in the Phil. And if you did want to buy a single off iTunes, I don't know who does that anymore, but yeah, you can do that too. I've got singles called Boyo and Undercover Lover at the moment, and I've got a new one that I've been working on over lockdown, which will be out later in August. And also as part of the Sync Pink, we've also teamed up with Comet Relief, and we've been doing lots of stuff to try and raise some money for lots of local charities that we're giving out to. So they're selling tote bags and giving away free badges to anybody who wants to go onto the website and just to get some stuff. But yeah, all the contributions go to all the charities that we work with in London. So
you're locked into Transmission Roundhouse.
If you want to follow Soraya on her socials, she's at Soraya Aisha. That is SURIYAAISHA. And you can also follow LaPhil as well, who is at I Am LaPhil. And if you want to follow me, I'm at Mr. Rory Boyle. I hope if you're a straight person listening to this, or a cis person, or somebody who doesn't identify anywhere on the queer spectrum, that it's inspired you to be a greater ally towards the LGBTQ community. And also, if you are queer, I hope it's made you think about a few different ways in which you can increase your allyship, or encourage others to do so themselves. All that's left for me to say is thank you for getting it in gear, keeping it here, and listening to Queer Ear.